The morning show on Trib Live Radio is brought to you by the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James, recently highlighted as the face of financial guidance in Pittsburgh Magazine. The Trib Live Radio Triple Threat.
He wants three. You know that's a trip. Trip. Triple.
And Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz, right here on Trib Live Radio.
As we head into the playoffs, two intangibles that are often talked about this time of year: health and momentum. Fair to say the Steelers have a pretty sizable edge in both health and momentum over the Bengals, even though they lost just 2 weeks ago to Baltimore, given the bizarre way they have been propelled into the postseason, guys.
And I'm worried about Tim's health. He's been hacking up a lung in here since we got in, sneezing, coughing, blowing his nose.
You ever have one of those, about his mental health?
Well, hold on.
You
ever have one of those sneezes that just starts something? You feel fine, then you sneeze, and all of a sudden your head explodes? That's what I had walking in here.
Your first cold of the year, you're soft. You can't handle it.
That's probably what it is. You're right. I'm soft.
No, I mean, last year, Guy, the Steelers won.
He thinks he's one of the best talk show hosts, but he's soft.
Four in a row wins last year heading into the playoffs, but the late injury to Le'Veon Bell changed all that. They had no momentum anymore. Well, they had no health.
The injury to D'Angelo Williams could change all that, too. I don't think it's any different. They have no running game behind him.
The only team that has health and momentum right now, I think, is Kansas City in the AFC. They are the only team that has both health and momentum, and then you look at them and you just say, are they good enough?
And while Justin Houston was in some question, right? I mean, as far as health goes, he came back, but I'm not sure to what degree of...
I suppose that's true. Yes, I was thinking more about the offensive side of the ball with the star kind of fantasy players, but you're right, Justin Houston should be considered in that. And you know, am I wrong about that? Look at every other team.
No.
You know, there's lots of questions about the Patriots. There's questions about the quarterback health and momentum in Denver. There's certainly questions about quarterback play, health, and momentum in Pittsburgh. Same thing in Cincinnati as well, because you don't know who the quarterback is. You can't call them healthy.
Nope.
And momentum, I guess, the Texans are healthy and have momentum, so those two teams will play each other. But with the Texans, it's just, are they good enough? One of those two teams will be out.
That's the same with the Vikings, right? They don't have any serious injuries right now, or do they?
On the NFC side, I guess you could say that about the Vikings.
Right? But I think that describes them, too. Are they good enough to do anything about it? But, you know, I don't believe a whole lot in momentum, Ken. Because I think if you have a crappy first 8 minutes of the first quarter, that's forgotten in a hurry. And I also think that the Baltimore game was so lousy and so recent, even though they played their best football. They've won 4 out of 5. It's their best stretch of the entire season. And 3 of those wins were against division winners. That's the positive spin on it. They may have had backup quarterbacks, and they may not have been at their best when they played those teams. And one of them was Indianapolis that didn't even make the playoffs. But still, clearly this has been the best stretch of games that they have. But then you look at things like Roethlisberger's increased penchant for throwing interceptions, and I don't think there's a major edge there myself.
Isn't 05, though, the shining example of momentum carrying a team to a Super Bowl with the Steelers?
Yes.
They won 8 in a row at the end of the year. I guess even in that first quarter against the Bengals, things didn't start real well. They got behind in that game, right?
Right. They're down, what was it, 17-7.
So for a moment,
even after they knocked out
the injury to Palmer, you know, if that doesn't happen, I think they probably lose that game, right?
Yeah, even after they knocked out Carson Palmer and John Kitna came in, I think they gave up a couple more scores after that.
Well, let's go to health then.
Hey, can I just throw something?
I mean, the Bengals are only 5-4 since they beat the Steelers November 1st. I mean, the funny thing is, a lot of teams' fortunes have turned based on playing the Steelers. Chiefs are 1-5. They haven't lost since they beat the Steelers to break that mix. Seriously.
That's incredible.
And you look at Seattle. They were floundering around at 500. They were either 5-5 or I think they were 5-5 when the Steelers played them. They beat the Steelers. I told you what the paper said the next day in Seattle when I come back. I mean, you would have thought they'd won the Super Bowl. They've been unbelievably hot since. Cincinnati, I think it's affected negatively. We've talked about the Big Brother thing. They were undefeated when they beat the Steelers 7-0 on November 1st, barely 500 since, and I think it's a little bit because of the Big Brother syndrome that we've talked about. So I think a lot of, you know, everybody else, they can say what they want about the Steelers. I still think they sort of view them as, if you beat them, it can be a projectile.
And Ken, if you want to talk about momentum getting you to a Super Bowl, which was the case, no doubt, in 2005, under Tomlin in 08 and 10, they really didn't have that. Because remember in 08, well, yes, they were lucky and managed to avoid having the Patriots in the playoff bracket because it was the Castle year. They got destroyed. I mean, worked 2 weeks before the playoffs started by Tennessee. Tennessee was the one seed that year. They got lucky because Tennessee got upset along the way as well. I guess it was by Baltimore. They had to play Baltimore again, which was no easy task. But Baltimore took them out. Tennessee was 13-3 that year,
yep,
and destroyed Pittsburgh. It was something like 31-14. Yeah, 31-14. I just looked it up. 31-14.
Yeah.
And then in 2010, they lost the Jets 2 weeks before the playoffs started. And you knew the Jets were going to be in the playoffs in all likelihood at that point, which they got in as a wild card. So, you know, it's not like they went in on real hot streaks the last two Super Bowls. Definitely in 04.
But those years they had bye weeks, which makes it less important to be streaming in. I mean, we haven't seen that many wild card teams get on a run, but there have been a few, right? Arizona did it in 08 to get to a Super Bowl, and the Giants did it.
They were also able to build momentum by, hey, taking out the Cleveland Browns the last week of the season. 31-0, and what was the other one? 41-9. So that, I guess, helped propel them, gain a little momentum, and stay sharp, basically working through a preseason game en route to the bye.
Yeah.
Well, I heard you and Jerry Dulac talking last night about no team that needed help on the last day has gone to the Super Bowl, and then someone disputed that by the Packers,
there's
I guess.
Some Packer team.
Did you guys ever look that up? Because I got out of the car and I didn't hear the end of it. But
but
just even in general, whether that happened at one time or not, I think that tells you, Ken, that your momentum thing is kind of right. The teams that have needed help on the last day that got in never really have gone that far, which makes you wonder about this Steeler team too.
Oh, well, my theory was this was going to give them some late season momentum, and this would propel them, at least for this week, to win over the Bengals. I mean, Pittsburgh's won 4 of 5. They've beaten two teams in the playoff field in that time, Cincy and Denver.
The two that they'll play if they advance.
Right. The Bengals lost their quarterback. They've kind of sputtered here of late. They lost the Denver game on the late fumble with McCarron in there. And the health news yesterday was to Pittsburgh's edge, right? So far, so good on D'Angelo Williams. Just a sprained ankle, day-to-day, right, from the MRI?
Yeah, I I know we're looking at this as not a break as being good enough news that he's going to play, but in my opinion, isn't there a hell of a lot between high ankle sprain and not a break he's going to be able to play?
Well, here's the way I'm looking at it. I don't expect him to play this week. If they somehow survive this week, at least he's not lost for the rest of the year, it does not appear, unless the rest of the year is only this Sunday. So I think I'd be surprised if he plays Sunday, but the good news is no structural damage, that if they should advance, maybe he would be ready in 2 weeks. Now, that's me playing Dr. Chow.
Well, you're good at it, though. You're better at Dr. Chow than Dr. Chow, as we've established this.
Well, if he can't play, then I would sign another running back. The fact that they have no intention of doing so leads me to think he is going to play. Maybe I'm being too optimistic there.
Are they with the salary cap right now? What would that...
I don't even know if that applies to the playoffs. Is there? I guess it must. You can't just sign anybody. That's a good question for Cabali when he joins us at 11:30. I don't know. I mean, there aren't that many great names out there, right? You wouldn't bring Ben Tate back in. It's been too long for Ray Rice probably to even think that. Tim, you were talking about a couple of former college guys that were out there that you had seen written about. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe Fitzgerald
James Wilder. Tucson. Steeler Wire put out a story about James Wilder, the former running back with the Florida State Seminoles. His dad was an NFL player. Remember
him?
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough for those guys. That was the Ben Tate problem. He didn't know the offense. You know, you come in week one.
Yeah, exactly. Therein lies the dilemma, right? I mean, if you go down that path again, you're going to get some of the same issues that you got with James Wilder. Ben Tate in the first place, and that's what they're trying to avoid. That's allegedly the appeal of Toussaint, which is you got somebody who knows the system.
Or LeGarrette Blount last year when he went to New England. He had been there recently. You know,
right.
He had been playing in the league. That was a huge boost for them. This year, I guess you do just have to go to Toussaint, but boy, I mean, they had cut Isaiah Pede. I mean, even bring him in for an extra body, you know?
Well, they brought him in, and remember, they liked Isaiah Pede in the draft. They actually considered drafting him. They liked him, I think, a year before he even came out. There was some talk about Isaiah Pede being a good fit here. Went through some problems. He finally became a free agent and an opportunity for them to sign him. They signed him, and they couldn't even get him on the field, and they couldn't get rid of him fast enough. So I don't think so. I don't think they'll bring him back.
How difficult do you, of all positions, I think a running back can step in more quickly than any other position, offensive or defense, other than maybe punter or kicker.
Yes, I agree with. Yes,
but
it
how,
should be easier.
How tough, though, is it still, even with, I mean, the one thing we saw with, the guy that came in Sunday, I can't think of his name.
The running back, Toussaint.
I mean, he came in, but immediately, and they were talking yesterday, the couple of guys that they made available about, I thought it was funny, Darius Hayward Bay said, well, he's a guy that pays attention in meetings, and I'm thinking, so there are guys who don't? but he said he pays attention in meetings, and he immediately came in, and he didn't set the world on fire. They weren't running the ball well even before the injury.
No.
But he immediately picked up a couple of blitzes early, kept Ben clean, and I mean, if you bring a guy in from nowhere that maybe is a little more pizzazz in his step to get you some yards running the ball, what if he blows up? What if he fumbles like Ben Tate because he's not sure of what side to take a handoff on or misses an assignment? You know, sometimes I wonder, you're better off just going with what you have.
The other guy that came up in that Steeler Wire story was a guy named Alonzo Harris. He's a former Raven, 6'1", 237. So he's a big guy. He obviously just run people over and fall forward, and he can help you maybe in that context. But the interesting thing about Wilder, too, is he's a former Bengal practice squad guy. So if you wanted to bring him on board just for the
perfect
case,
bring him in.
Yeah, for espionage reasons, if nothing else. As if, though, you really need to figure out more about the Bengals. I mean, what else do you need to figure out there?
I guess so. I mean, in fact, that's the bigger news, is that A.J. McCarron is, well, they're preparing for him to be the starter. That could be subterfuge, I guess, from Marvin Lewis. He was yelling at McCarron for giving off too much information the previous week, that he was going to get his cast off yesterday. So I'm sure they'll try to play that a little close to the vest, but I'd be stunned with a guy with a fractured thumb in his right hand would be able to take the cast off and play this week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just by default, I think you have to give the Steelers the injury edge there. Maybe not a huge momentum edge like you're saying, Guy, but it all goes into, Tim, you were
asking.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd rather have my quarterback than my running back, if you're right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this house money argument that if they don't win the game, it's still, I heard Pursuta talking about this in the morning show over on Brand Z, Tim. They've won 10 games back-to-back years. They made the playoffs 2 years in a row. Like, get off their backs. No, you got to win this game. You cannot lose to A.J. McCarron and come away from this season.
Did Mike bring that up again today?
Yeah, he was talking about that this morning. God, the defenders of the Shield, they're already putting up the walls here before they've even lost the game this week.
Preemptive excuse making.
This would be as bad as losing to Tebow. If you go to Cincy and lose to A.J. McCarron, that is embarrassing. Maybe not as bad as Tebow, but it's close.
Yeah, I do not get the impression. That sounds good now, and then when it's the fourth quarter and you're down four and A.J. McCarron is up 28-24 on you, and you're looking at this defense saying, how did this defense give up four touchdown drives to A.J. McCarron? And then Ben Roethlisberger throws yet another pick to Reggie Nelson to end the game, and you're saying, how come Roethlisberger keeps throwing picks in big-time situations? You ain't talking about house money. You ain't feeling like a lot has been accomplished here. Then it just feels like another piece of a repetitive cycle where you've lost a playoff game and you've failed to win one for a fifth straight year, and you've done so against an insufficient quarterback in a place where you usually tend to win against a franchise that you deem to be a loser. Not that I'm saying that the Broncos are deemed to be a loser. They're not, but that year they were. That year they were 8-8 with Tim Tebow.
And by the way, what, their first win in 25 years in the playoffs if the Bengals win? I mean, you would
1990 beat Houston.
Oh, my God. I mean,
the last playoff team they beat no longer exists.
It would be worse this year to lose to them than losing to Baltimore last year at home, in a way. I mean, at least Baltimore you respect. At least Baltimore, the rivalry, is at a point where...
Yeah, I get a little tired, Ken. Out of one corner of our mouths, we preen and preach about how the Steelers are held to a higher standard, and then in advance of a wild card game against the Bengals and A.J. McCarron, we're saying, oh, that's okay if they lose. Well, which one is it?
I can't believe anybody's saying that. I mean, but there are. I think Cabali's kind of on that route. You know, they've get off Tomlin's back. He's done a good job here.
I think some of the media guys are too close to this team.
I don't expect this team to win the Super Bowl, but I'd be pretty disappointed if they don't find a way to win Sunday.
Yeah, and now if you win Sunday, everything else changes. Now you know, we'll see what happens with Denver and getting past that. But this is certainly a winnable game. Now, I do see Bob Holtzman has tweeted here, ESPN, and Mike Tomlin's favorite. Andy Dalton is out of his cast, per multiple sources, but a team source tells me Dalton's status for Saturday is still unknown. So this is going to be like the D'Angelo watch, pretty much the watch all the way up until game day, right? Guy will be out there with binoculars at Paul Brown Stadium trying to see how the cast looks on the right hand. But that actually could be to the Bengals' disadvantage, too. I mean, if they put him out there and he's not ready and he fumbles a snap on the first series of the game, I mean, that also could work to your advantage for Pittsburgh. But give us your thoughts on health and momentum and also the house money argument. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com. If the Steelers lose, are you fine with the season and ready to just press on? Or would you be more along the lines of Tom Coughlin, get out, you know, retire, slash Bruce Arians, you're fired if they lose this game? And do they have a big edge in momentum now that they've maybe backed in, but backed in kind of a glorious way? SportsTalk@TribWeb.com.
How is that glorious?
Well, it's a you expected nothing and now you get something. I think that is the glorious nature of it.
I think
right?
Each step they take, less people will be calling for Tomlin's head. Or, in fact, I think that that discussion ends even if they lose Sunday now for the most part. And as each week goes on, let's say they win this week and lose in Denver. Let's say they win this week, beat Denver, and lose in the AFC Championship game. There'll be less and less disgruntled Steeler fans the further they go. I mean, I don't know if anybody – yeah, you never really know. There have been lots of teams that have won the Super Bowl that sitting in before the playoffs started, even the people that follow them most closely didn't really think they were going to win the Super Bowl. You know, health, a lucky break – guy's girlfriend stabs him in the leg the night before to prevent him from returning a fumble the night for a touchdown.
I love that Nick Harper just he carries on forever.
Weird stuff happens, man.
I remember driving to the field that day thinking to myself, what if this guy intercepts Roethlisberger in the flat and gets tracked down? I remember thinking that.
Really?
When the story came out. But, you know, because when did we find out about it? Like right before the game, right? Did we find out about right before the game?
I forget.
I think it was the morning of. I don't think we knew it the night before.
No, I mean, the incident occurred the night before.
Right.
Right before the game, I think the story came out.
Because I thought the first report was that he might not be able to play.
Now, this year the Steelers have had backup quarterbacks come through for them. A.J. McCarron, if he does have to play, I guess you have to admit he's played okay the last couple weeks for the Bengals. Okay, right? He did lose the game to Denver. But since the Steelers game, he has not turned the ball over. It looks like he's being very careful, very Alex Smithy, very dink and dunky the last couple weeks. Tim, you were alerting me to a Pro Football Focus report, which Cabali hates the mere mention of the website. But they were breaking down his numbers from last week, and it's pretty clear the Bengals are putting him in a position to succeed as best they can, right? If he's got to play, they're not going to ask him to do too much.
Right. If you're looking at the numbers, you believe the numbers. A.J. McCarron threw only 5 passes over 10 yards downfield in the pocket versus Baltimore. 5 passes over 10 yards down the field. That's, I think he only completed one of them, by the way, too, if I heard correctly.
This is the kind of guy that, you know, say what you want about Dick LeBeau, whether it was his time to go or not, but he did take advantage of inexperienced quarterbacks. I don't have... as much confidence in his Steeler defense that they can maximize what you normally would against a guy that has started as few games as he can. And I'm not saying he's going to come in and beat you, but he's obviously a lot more comfortable than he was than when he got thrust into that game. At that point in time, he's probably figuring he's not going to play all year, and then all of a sudden there he is.
Speaking of Pro Football Focus, they had a couple of interesting stats, didn't they, Ken? Did you pick up on some of these as well?
Yeah, for the running game of Cincy?
The running game of Cincy. No, I didn't...
Well, here's what they were saying about the running game. Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard both earned positive grades. They averaged 6.0 yards per carry against the Ravens, which, of course, the Steelers didn't fare very well against them 2 weeks ago. Hill stood out with his burst, and he averaged 4.1 yards before contact, however. Bernard was more elusive and averaged 4.5 yards after contact. Well, it sounds like their running game is thriving. That's what jumped out to me. Were there other numbers that you were looking at on there?
Well, their statistical evaluation of exactly how bad Antoine Blake is.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So let's see if Cabali disagrees with these numbers. Let's see how selective he is in his agreement or disagreement with Pro Football Focus. If he hates Pro Football Focus so much, then he can tell me where Pro Football Focus is wrong in evaluating Antoine F. Blake. All right. Blake, according to that site... The Steelers cornerback broke all of their statistical records for yards allowed in coverage, 1,074, and missed tackles with 28. Only Brandon Browner graded worse as a cornerback this year. Okay, so if you look at just where Antoine Blake is and how they evaluated him, you got to say, well, that's spot on.
Wait a minute. Give me those numbers again. He missed 28 tackles.
According to Pro Football Focus, he missed 28 tackles.
Oh.
And he allowed 1,074 yards in coverage.
He allowed 10 football fields in coverage.
Yes.
I've had a couple of cars that didn't drive that far.
Now, the funny thing is, when they tweeted this out, there was a typo. They spelled tackles, E-L-S. So some guy tweeted back to me, what's a tack-L? And I replied back to him, don't worry, he missed 28 of L-E's the other way, too. So
that's Randall's cousin, tack-L.
So, all right, so you believe that, right? That sounds about right for Antoine Blake. Would you be stunned to find out that those numbers were pretty accurate or no?
I mean, I haven't. This is the beauty of Pro Football Focus. I like them. I don't get a chance to watch and grade the rest of the league. They do. So it puts it in some perspective for you. If
right,
that's the
I
worst in the league, yeah, I believe it.
I also believe that Brandon Browner might be that bad. Now, what I don't believe necessarily is Ross Cockrell is the 21st best cornerback in football, and Brandon Boykin is the 23rd best corner in football.
Well, that's limited snaps. I mean, I think
it's also because Antoine
well.
Blake is on the field, and if you're on the field as
well,
a cornerback
true.
And you don't get the ball thrown in your direction, you don't get the opportunity to look bad. You know what I mean? And since everybody's looking at Antoine Blake so much, these guys look better by comparison.
Yeah, but we've seen Cockrell enough that I think he's, you know, when they throw his way, he's been in pretty good coverage. I mean, he shut Terrell Pryor down. Okay, it's a new receiver this week.
I thought Cockrell was pretty good when he first started getting in there in the first few weeks of the season. And then I think he hit a lull in the middle part of the year, and I think he's bounced back the last couple weeks. Last 2 weeks, I think he's been pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, Gay was graded out as 34th behind those other two. I think Willie's had a better season than that until that Raven game. I think the Ravens were the first team to take advantage of him on the outside.
Even though McCarron's success has mostly been dink and dunk since the Steelers played him, he did burn them with the long bomb in that game. And what worries me, I think, because of the Steelers' increase in creating turnovers this year, if you do make a team run 12, 13, 15, 17 plays before they're going to score, there's a greater chance that they're going to screw up somewhere and that the Steelers create that turnover. I still get concerned about, you know, one or two big plays against them, which the Bengals, even with him thrust into a game that he wasn't prepared to play in, were able to pull off. What about now after they've watched, you know, he's practiced for a month and played?
You mean a Tebow-esque play where you
yeah.
don't fear his deep ball?
Yeah,
and
I mean,
bang,
one of those
up.
In a game, in a playoff game, could kill you. I think this defense has been very open to giving that kind of thing up.
By the way, the sake of comparison for the Cincinnati Bengals, Pac-Man was 11th according to their numbers. Hall was 24th. Dre Kirkpatrick was the 9th worst.
Mm. Wow.
So they had Kirkpatrick in the bottom 10. They also graded out Vontaze Burfict as having his best game of the season against the Baltimore Ravens last week.
Well, those are good numbers. So Dre Kirkpatrick is your Huckleberry this week that you're going after if you're a Ben Roethlisberger. But let me give you something else from those numbers, Tim. They evaluated the Ravens and Ryan Mallett in that game and basically said when he had a clean pocket, he was good, and when he was pressured, he struggled, which goes back to like how insane it was that 2 weeks ago the Steelers didn't pressure him.
What a shock.
But to Guy's point of, like, yes, you fear McCarron's going to beat you deep. I agree with that, Guy. There is that Tebow fear. But it's better to die with your boots on, as Tomlin would say, and come after A.J. McCarron than let him sit back there and just kind of dink and dunk you to death, right? I mean, I would rather them take a chance on him beating him for a deep play or two and be aggressive, unlike the Ryan Mallett game.
I don't think he can beat the Steelers dinking and dunking him. I don't think he's good enough to do that consistently. I could prove me wrong, but I don't think he's good enough consistently to do that for an entire day. But I do think that one 66-yard pass could do them in.
I think he's just as good as doing it, though, Guy, as Ryan Mallett is. You know, Ryan Mallett did it.
Yeah, well, that's probably true. Although I think if they played that game 10 more times, he wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, part of it is Ben, and, you know, he gave him 2 turnovers, and that didn't help.
That's key, too. I mean, when you're facing an offense that's going to try to do that, you got to make sure they're starting at their 20 or 30 and not in your territory 3 times like the Browns did in Cleveland on Sunday.
It's the Trib Live Radio Morning Show, brought to you by the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James, Pittsburgh Magazine's Face of Financial Guidance. Mark Cabali, the face of our Steelers coverage, will join us at 11:30 today. Tim will be heading down to the Tomlin presser for noontime. You got a question in tow already, Tim? You ready to grill Tomlin on something?
Yeah, one thing I want to bring up to him, and I want to see what you guys think about this, if it's possible or not. This is a little bit more existential and talk showy, but whatever. When it comes to this Bengal game on Saturday, do you see it becoming perhaps the turning point in this rivalry between these two teams, similar to what took place in those two playoff games between the Ravens and Steelers? Remember, the Ravens-Steelers series was a dirty, nasty, chippy, fight-filled, Joey Porter going to brawl with Ray Lewis at the bus. That's what that rivalry was. Those two playoff games occurred. They were nasty, physical, hard-hitting, mean, vicious, but it was all between the whistles. And it wasn't extracurricular, and it wasn't chippy. And that shifted the rivalry, it felt like to me. From 2011 on,
from being dirty to being football.
Yeah, to being about respect.
I think it's a good topic. I don't think he'll bite on that.
I wonder, though, if this is – where it becomes a part about football for this game, though, is, let's face it, the chippiness and the dirtiness of this rivalry affected that game last time. And it probably did to the Steelers' advantage. I don't think they'll have that advantage this time. I think the Bengals are going to have to force themselves to be a little bit smarter. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? Is that possible?
I think it's player-related more than it is game-related, like playoff game-related. I could be wrong on that. But it strikes me that as long as Joey Porter was playing, it was going to be a nasty Ravens rivalry bordering on dirty. And as long as Burfict is in this game and Pac-Man Jones, Patna, it's going to be tough to be one of respect, you know what I mean, where it takes the next launch to these teams.
On that front, I do think that if you go back and really look at it, it's not like Terrell Suggs was viewed as a noble warrior back in 2010 or 2008.
True.
He was looked upon as a dirty, rotten, cheap, leg-twisting, head-hunting SOB. Nobody had anything nice to say about Terrell
Suggs.
Well,
they did, though, because I remember Arians said he loved him. He's the best. Like, I remember Bruce Arians standing there saying how great he was, and he's the best pass rusher in the league. Might have been trying to butter him up, but I think they did respect his
ability.
Yeah,
but they also thought he went at Ben's legs. And remember, was it Deuce's legs, the running backs? He went after running backs' legs. Remember diving? And they used to complain about Ray Lewis diving on the pile late to get his tackles and then hurting people when he would dive on the pile. Lee Flowers popping off about how you got blown up by our no-name fullback, meaning Dan Kreider, all that stuff. You know, it took a while before there was respect amongst the Steelers and Ravens. There was a lot of Ray Lewis being cast and Terrell Suggs being cast in a very similar light to the way that Vontaze Burfict is cast now.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess at the end of it, Ryan Clark's going over to their locker room and, yucking it up with Ed Reed and the guys. I don't know, Guy. I don't see this Bengals. Based on this year, it's too recent. I don't see that happening.
Well,
in this
rivalry. Saying this might be the turning point.
Yeah, because you can't. You're not going to start stuff before in the stretching line this week. So maybe because it is a playoff game, it forces it to. Now, it could be back to the same old stuff when they play in October next year. I don't know. But I think there was a turning point, and I'm trying to remember the timeline exactly of when Baltimore won their first Super Bowl, where that rivalry was then. I think once they won one, I think the Steelers had a little more respect for them too.
Once the Ravens won one,
what I mean. Yeah,
the Ravens won one the year before Heinz Field was built, 2000.
Yeah, but I'm trying to remember where the hatred was at the time. But I think that was part of it. This is, what have you guys done? You're the old Cleveland Browns, and I think once they won, they still hated each other, but I think it was a respectful hate more than a dirty hate.
You remember how those games went that next year, too, the first year at Heinz Field. Remember that? You know, the Chris Miss game? Remember he missed all the field goals? The Steelers were playing great, and then they blew it because of the kicker, and that set the whole tone for that season. And then they won in the playoffs against Baltimore in round one.
So what would your question be to Tomlin, Mike? Now that you guys are ready to meet again in the postseason, do you expect the respect factor to go up a notch between the teams, something like that?
Yeah. Do you get away from the trash talk and, mind games? Because, they played the mind games last time and it won. It won for them.
I don't know. We had too many scraps. We had A.B. scrapping with Reggie Nelson. We had Whitworth going at it with guys. I mean, that was as nasty of a regular season game as any Ravens games we ever watched, wasn't it?
Well, the interesting thing now that we didn't have then is the a lot of this was precipitated by what was going back and forth on Twitter and social media.
Right.
You didn't have that in 2000. I mean, you know, you have to save your trash talk for the field back then and to tick somebody off. Now you can tick them off 3 weeks in advance by tweeting.
Or threatening to kill them on South Beach, you know? I think that's beyond respect.
Well, if Ray Lewis had done that, you'd have to take him seriously.
Oh, boy.
To answer your question, no, I don't think it's near respect. But I'd be curious to hear what Todd would say about that. I'm sure there are players over there they do respect, right? I mean, there are guys that they have gone up against for a long time. Like Whitworth, for example. I mean, that he is good, right? I mean, Harrison gets no pressure on him. That's
I think there's guys on almost every team that you respect. I mean, you think the Steelers respect Joe Thomas?
Absolutely, guarantee
you they do.
Yeah.
I mean, there was even who was the guy that kind of came up and patted Harrison after the interception on Sunday from the Browns? And, you know, it was kind of strange, especially considering that point in the game.
Oh, and the other question I was going to ask Tomlin is, what is your game plan and how many trick plays will you have?
The Bob Holtzman special. See if he bites on that one. All right, to the mail we go. And we'll get some Penn stock in coming up at 11 a.m. this morning, starting a home-and-home with the Hawks. So we want to get some hockey talk along. Ben, though, in on the Steelers. If they win this week, guys, would playing New England earlier than the AFC Championship game maybe be a better thing because they are injured? I realize they could only play them in the title game, but did they miss out there? Are they unlucky? Or should they hope that other teams can beat up Brady and the Pats?
Well, you're going to miss them if they get taken out. So if they don't get
taken
out.
Tim thinks they're going to be taken out.
Was that? No, I don't think.
Don't you?
Gonna...
Oh, I thought you said you thought they were losing the first game.
No. I still think they're going to win the AFC.
Oh, okay.
No, but I'm saying if they get taken out by somebody else, then it doesn't matter. It's a moot point. Or if they beat the Kansas City Chiefs, then getting them around earlier, I guess, wouldn't have been nice then, huh? I mean, if they're good enough to beat
the
Chiefs.
They could be more beat up by the AFC Championship game.
You know what I mean? Like, just to say, well, if you got them around earlier, you would have won. Well, okay, but if you get them the next round, then and if you're comparing whether you got them in the second game of the playoffs or the third game of the playoffs, if they got to the third game of the playoffs, then they were good enough to win despite their injuries against KC. So why would you assume you would have beaten them and the Chiefs wouldn't have? Or the Texans, for that matter.
If his question is, would you rather play the Patriots in the divisional round or the AFC Championship game, I think the emailer is right to hint that it would have been better for the Steelers to have played them, given the two choices, in the divisional round.
My answer would have been no.
Oh, okay.
Either. No.
Don't want to play them at all?
No, I do not want to go to Foxborough.
All right. Mike S. emails. I think the Steelers would be better off, guys, if Dalton plays while he's injured. He'll be rusty. Let's hope the Steelers don't take dumb penalties in this game, too, that come back to hurt them the last time they did, although it didn't affect the game. By the way, if Cincy loses, do you guys think they would fire Marvin Lewis? That's interesting.
They've been pretty supportive of him, and the fact that Dalton got hurt, you could almost point to the season was cruising along. I mean, don't forget some of the things that happened in that game. Not only, I mean, Dalton got hurt, Eifert got hurt in the first series. You lose both of them. Pac-Man Jones didn't play. This is a team that was pretty healthy all year. The first game that you can say that about the Steelers. They went through some pretty difficult times with suspensions and injuries and were able to keep their head above water. As soon as the injuries piled up, really for the first time this year with Cincinnati, they did lose. But I think it's kind of a built-in. I think they're kind of afraid that their history has been so crappy for the most part, and the best years they've had have been under him, that they'll stick with him.
I don't think Mike Brown wants to pay anybody he doesn't have to pay.
Yeah.
So I think you would hold on to Marvin Lewis.
You go 12-4. It's hard to fire a coach when you lose a playoff game with a backup quarterback.
Quarterback,
as much as it
yeah.
would kill them, the Steelers are the ones that do it.
Plus, they've never. Well, I shouldn't say never. It's been a long time since they've ever had anybody do this well as their coach.
Almost never. I mean,
well, Sam Weiss.
Sam Weiss. Yeah.
They have their coordinator Hugh Jackson.
Did he take him
getting,
to both of their Super Bowls?
I think Forrest Gregg took him.
Yeah, there. I think you're right.
Hugh Jackson is apparently meeting with San Francisco, I think, and Miami for their coaching jobs, or at least they were requesting permission. They have an internal candidate. I wonder if maybe they would consider promoting Hugh Jackson to their head coach. Maybe. I don't. If they were going to make a change, that might be a way they would go. Remember, they lost Zimmer already, who's in the playoffs with Minnesota this year. Matt emails the show.
Can I ask a question, a Rooney Rule-related question here?
Yes.
Have any teams interviewed a white guy first? Or is this just is this the
get it out of the way?
Hey, we're interviewing the African American.
always Terrell Austin, the poor guy.
Hugh Jackson. There's another candidate out there from somewhere else. I've just blanked on it, but there's somebody else who's, you know, every NFL team wants it to be known that, hey, we are doing what we're supposed to do. The rules say we're supposed to do this. And, you know, eventually, on occasion, like with Tomlin, you know, if the coaching search is true, Todd Bowles is another good example, hire an African-American candidate because he's the right coach and the right guy, not just because the rules are telling you to do it, and you might be better for it. The Jets were better for it. The Steelers definitely, for a while, were better for it by hiring a good coach in Mike Tomlin. I just hope some of these interviews are being done for the right reasons, not just because the rules say they have to, is what I'm getting at.
I mean, Terrell Austin's a Pitt guy. He's a Western PA guy. I don't know if he's 50. He's not that old. Should he have gotten a job by now? He gets all these interviews. It's like stunning that he's had. I think he's interviewing like five teams right now. If he doesn't get hired, that becomes
maybe he doesn't interview well.
Maybe.
I mean, I would imagine Mike Tomlin interviews very well.
That certainly was
the personality.
What we heard from the Rooneys.
Yeah. And the more we've gotten to know him, too. I mean, he's you know, personable guy, energetic guy, can turn a phrase well. And I would think, for example, I don't think Russ Grimm would be a guy. If he works for you and his football resume speaks for itself, but I wouldn't think that sitting across an interview table from Russ Grimm, he'd be overly impressive.
By the way, Cleveland's opening candidates, Terrell Austin and Doug Marrone. Good on you, Cleveland.
Well, Doug Marrone is not black.
No. But he's unimpressive. So they got that going for them. Syracuse boy.
You got us to the Pinstripe Bowl.
Oh,
the bowl that you were dying to get Pitt into.
That would have been a better bowl. It's a better game. This from Maddie says, if D'Angelo doesn't play, guys, it's going to be hard to beat Cincinnati unless Antonio Bryant. Combine those guys. Brown and Bryant have big games against Cincy's Potnas, and they don't turn the ball over. What should the Steelers do when it comes down to two-point conversions, by the way? Do you think they keep going for them in the playoffs?
You said no.
Yeah, I fear the Bengals' defense a little bit in that capacity. They're tough to run on, right?
If you're basing your judgment on how easy it's going to be to convert the actual two-point conversion play based on how good the other team's defense is, then what? You would only go for two against who?
Well,
the Patriots, maybe?
Against non-elite.
I mean, the Patriots are actually okay defensively, too.
Good front sevens I would shy away from, because you want the threat of the run. You don't just want to spread the field all the time and go five wides. I don't know. If there's a weakness there that you think you could exploit, fine. I just think the Bengals' defense is good, and it's not an area that I would really want to risk this week.
Of the six AFC playoff teams, wouldn't you say that the Steelers' front seven is the worst of the six?
Yeah, you could be right there. Yeah, you might be hesitant to go against all these teams. That's a fair point. Most of the time, we were talking about this with Russell Baxter yesterday. Of the top 12 scoring defenses in football, they all made the playoffs but one. The Jets were ninth. They were the only team not to make it in. So if you're a good defense, you pretty much make the playoffs.
The Steelers, for instance, finished what? Third in sacks? Wasn't it third in sacks?
I think second, actually.
Second?
Which is stunning.
But like I just said, you didn't even hesitate when I said they're the third, they're the sixth best defensive front.
Yeah.
Because that sack total thing for the Steelers has become so misleading this year. Because when you finish second and 11, I'm doing some math in my head. This is always dangerous. 19 of your 48 sacks came against the Niners, Colts, and Browns in three games.
Well, a couple of things to think about with the two-point conversion in the playoffs for me. Number one, if D'Angelo Williams isn't playing and you're not that confident that you're going to be able to run the ball, even if you're going to throw it most of the time anyway, if you don't even have the chance of running it and they know that, that decreases your percentage. Second thing is, weather's going to be a factor in a lot of these games. A 33-yard extra point, if it's windy and snowing or raining, I would be more likely to go for two. If the weather's dry and there's not a wind factor, I think the problem with getting stopped, let's say like the Steelers have liked to go for that two on the first touchdown they score each week. You talk about momentum, Ken. That can be you just gave up a touchdown. You're feeling bad about yourself. You stop them from the two, and it reinvigorates you a little bit. It takes a little bit of the sting of giving up the touchdown away, which is magnified all the more in a playoff game. You can't tell me that Baltimore stopping the Steelers on 4th and 1 on their first drive 2 weeks ago wasn't the springboard for that upset. So I think those are things that you have to consider even more than you do in a regular season game. But number one for me, if D'Angelo Williams isn't playing, I'm probably kicking. Even if you're not going to give it to him, at least to have that threat.
And as you know, the Laird plan in its original form.
It's the Laird doctrine. Stop calling it a plan. I like doctrine better.
The Laird doctrine was advocating going for two every time, right? Yeah. So if you missed one, then you would make up for it and you'd be even Steven. And, you know, by the end of the game, if you scored 4 or 5 touchdowns, you'd come out ahead. In this case, Tomlin hasn't done that at all. He's picked and choose, but mostly has gone for it on the first touchdown and then quit going for two.
Yeah.
So if they missed it, I don't know what he would think. Then he would probably be spooked into not going for it the next time.
If you get that early, if you make it on that first one, you get that early edge, you got the other guys chasing you all day for that extra point, you know?
Ken, just to extrapolate this a little bit here. When it comes to the defensive fronts, sacks is not the purest indication. Of
let's take some front. Things further.
Here comes some Tim Benz stats. Some Tim Benz red zone stats.
No, I mean, he's reading off a little yellow piece of paper, which means Josh is feeding him stuff.
Denver was first with 52nd. New England was second with 49. The Steelers were third with 48. All right.
On sacks, okay.
Okay, so Cincinnati was 10th with 42, Houston was 5th with 45, and KC was 4th with 47.
So the 7 on Sunday jumped them ahead of a bunch of teams.
Against the Browns.
Yeah.
All right, and like I said before, 6 against the Colts and 7 against the Browns and 5 against
the 49ers.
But anyway,
you would stack it up, they'd be in the upper third of the league in terms of sacks, even
but
if you wanted to
all these teams are pretty close.
Cleveland.
If you're talking about, you know, whether or not you want to start going for two based on how good a defensive front is, how quickly they can get after your quarterback or mess things up on one given play,
I mean
they're
just,
all pretty
just
much
look
jammed
at their
in there.
Just look at Pecco and Geno Atkins, and that's you fear those guys. Like for the Steelers, I think you fear Cam Hayward and Tuitt. But for some reason, the Steelers' front seven is just not as intimidating as the Bengals' appears to be, right or wrong. You guys agree with that? I mean, I think Hayward's their star.
He might be getting burned out a little bit, Hayward. Has he looked all that impressive to you the last two games?
I guess
maybe
not
the
really.
Last month of the season, to be honest.
Hmm. He's consider him for player of the game yesterday, that's for sure.
1,027 snaps, more than any defensive lineman in the National Football League.
Wow.
Oh, I'm sorry, was that stat too in-depth?
That was a good stat. That's a good factoid. It goes back to your 28 missed tackles. Were these all Pro Football Focus numbers?
I don't know if that was a Pro Football Focus number or not. I saw Adamski tweet that one out yesterday.
Okay, it's a buzzsaw stat. So Hayward has played 1,000 more snaps than any other D lineman. Jeez.
In the entire league?
No, I didn't say that. No.
Well, no, it could have been thousands.
He played more snaps this season, 1,027, than any defensive lineman in the NFL.
Oh, okay. So he's played the most.
Yeah. Not 1,000 more.
Yeah, that'd be impossible.
All right. I'd buy that. I mean, they do have some guys that have played a lot there. That gets back to your draft new defensive end theory, I guess. You know, need a little depth there, which they haven't had much.
He's played 1,000 more than Cam Thomas, but...
and Mount McCullers. Looking at the Bengals' stats for run defense, they are 7th in the league in rushing D. That can be a little deceiving, though, in terms of yards, right? Like the Steelers are 5th in run D, but nobody runs against them. So
here's something else that came up last night when Dulac and I were talking about this game. Because there's this constant comparison. You started out the show with it today, Ken, talking about 2005 versus 2015.
Yeah.
What about the Bengals, 2005 versus 2015? Don't you think that Bengal team back then was better? Because I did.
They were going in before
Palmer got hurt.
Before chemo hit, yeah, I think so.
See, I think they're a better quarterback, obviously. If you talk about wide receiver, that might be a draw. Because I think A.J. Green, they had Hushman Zada, they had Chris Henry, and they had Ocho Cinco. So they might have been a little bit deeper, or at least 1 through 3 better, but A.J. Green is better than any of those guys. A.J. Green's been better against the Steelers than any of those guys.
I don't know that the quarterback edge was obvious, but he was their offense was better as a whole.
Well, I'm talking about Carson Palmer of that day prior to his knee being rolled up on versus Andy Dalton coming out of a cast or AJ McCarron.
Yeah. I thought you were comparing him to Ben. Like,
Going into that game.
Oh.
I'm talking about comparing the Bengals to the Bengals. We keep talking about comparing these Steelers to those Steelers. What about these Bengals to those Bengals?
Yeah, those Bengals were better.
You know, I would also say that their running game was a hell of a lot better. Rudy Johnson had broken the franchise rushing record that year, which he had
set
the year before.
Wow,
1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns that year for Rudy. And they also had Chris Perry out of the backfield who contributed fairly decently for them that year.
They're better at tight end now.
They're better at tight end, but...
I mean, Eifert was leading the league in touchdown catches when he got hurt in that game against the Steelers.
This secondary might be better, despite Dre Kirkpatrick. You know, they do have some good corners.
Yeah, I think they're probably better
Delta
on
Delta O'Neal. Yeah, you know, some of those guys. By the way, Matt put a PS on, which must be noted. Tim, you're probably hacking from all the vaping.
Well, that's fair.
Thank you, Matt. Troy,
I've been fine
in.
Since the show started, by the way. I've been okay.
Yeah. You're a gamer. Troy says, I don't like being the national media favorite going in. I don't like being the betting line favorite either. Maybe all that stuff doesn't matter as much as I think, but the whole nobody believed in us tagline seems to come up a lot in these games. Also, I don't believe the Steelers are playing with house money. I think it depends on how they lose. If they would come out slow and get beat because of breakdowns and sloppy play, I'd be mad. If they play well and still manage to lose for some reason, I might be more forgiving. I think that's fair. You always have to take into account how they would play and lose.
Yeah. I mean,
if Ben gets hurt or something.
Controversial play calling, a stupid penalty, a bad mistake, or if you just, you know, play a well-played, hard-fought football game and you lose a 20-17, and, you know, you can swallow it easier.
Double Dose of Florida here. Frank is in Orlando. He emails sportstalk@tribweb.com on the Team Spanos group of Raymond James Trib Live Radio Morning Show. Frank says, why doesn't Tomlin already have a backup running back in place? I'm not just piling on here. I think this is a valid criticism. Le'Veon Bell was lost in Week 8. A solid backup to Williams should have been solidly in place by now. Tomlin screwed this up last year, and it's shameful that they scrambled to sign Ben Tate the way they did. Now they find themselves in exactly the same position.
Well, I go back to, we'll ask Cabali about salary cap issues. And if you sign a guy, who was available, and you're also, if you're looking, is a guy, the kind of guy it sounds like he's talking about, I'm not sure he's going to come here for half a year, but if he's not working, I guess he'd come here for anything. Because you're going to have Bell and D'Angelo Williams will be back next year, right? And Bell, you don't need another guy for next year. So.
It's a little bit of a defeating argument, isn't it? Because, you know, they got Toussaint. They already had Todman. They got Toussaint. They decided Toussaint was better, so they started playing Toussaint before Todman. Nobody was complaining about Todman after the way Todman ripped the Steelers at the end of that preseason, correct? So it kind of looked like they had addressed it. I mean, when Le'Veon went down in Week 8, what running back was out there then that isn't out there now that they should have gotten instead of Fitz Toussaint?
Yeah, like the Patriots just signed Steven Jackson. I mean,
should they have signed Steven Jackson then?
I don't know.
Maybe. I didn't hear anybody then screaming, get Steven Jackson now.
If Toussaint can pick up the blitz and guy used, you noted he did a couple of times, I think that's fine. I mean, as long as he doesn't hurt you, if he knows the offense and he's solid enough back there in pass pro, I that might be good enough just for a week to get D'Angelo back. I'm not ready to say this. This is not as bad, I don't think, as the Tate situation where they scrambled the last week to get somebody. But, you know.
Well, I'm sure a lot of this is going to be discussed at the press conference, which we'll have for you later today, even if it's in theory and not in exact, you know, about if you find out, or are you looking at anybody if you find out he can't play? And I think because of what happened last year, they're more comfortable with as I said earlier, maybe a less talented, splashy guy that knows what's going on out there, that pays attention in meetings.
And for the record, the odds to win the Super Bowl, the Steelers are not the favorite, as that emailer pointed out.
I think he just meant the favorite in this game.
Oh, I thought he said the national favorite. Is that what he means, just for this game?
Let's go back to Troy. That was two emails ago.
The odds I'm looking at right now, the narrowest odds to win the Super Bowl, the Patriots at +250.
Yeah, it's Pats, Broncos, then Pittsburgh.
And well, the Broncos, according to what I'm looking at, are exactly the same. No, you're right about that. Yeah, the Broncos have better odds, closer odds than the Steelers do. Steelers are plus 550. Broncos are 350. Cardinals are 350. Panthers are 300. Like I said, the Patriots are 250. The Seahawks also have more narrow odds than the Steelers do at 350.
Email from Eric. Eric says, if the Steelers lose to Cincy, Tomlin will be back, guys. The Rooneys do it right when it comes to consistency with management. That said, I think his leash would be short, given the team's inconsistent on-field performance and losses to bad teams over the last few years. So Eric's calling for a bridge year next year. Not really.
Oh, a bridge year.
a short leash year. A leash year next year for Tomlin.
Is Jake Gobert going to be the backup running back?
Backup head coach. Ed emails the show from Denver, PA, where Guy's car once famously broke down.
For the record, if you want the longest odds for a Super Bowl matchup right now, longest odds for a matchup, Green Bay versus Pittsburgh. 45-1.
Really? How is that possible? That seems weird.
Minnesota and Pittsburgh, 4,000-1, or 40-1.
Man, it would be so great to end the season the way it began with the Hall of Fame game.
Oh. That's exactly
that
what I was thinking.
That was such a great watch.
Sean Sweezum could sing the national anthem. Except it would be O Canada.
Wouldn't Houston and somebody be the longest odds? Like Houston and Green Bay or something like that? Surprising that Pittsburgh would be long. If they're the third favorite to win it, that doesn't make any sense.
I think it's just because of the home stuff. Hmm. You know what? What I'm seeing here, I guess those odds are so long they're not even on the board because I don't see it.
They're
I'm
off
serious.
The board.
They're off the board. That's what it is. There's no Houston line here for any of these.
Now, Bill O'Brien, nobody gives him a chance. That's a legitimate card you can play.
Yeah.
I'm not even on the board.
This Mike Sando guy from ESPN ranked the playoff teams in his opinion. He's got Seattle 1. They got running back issues, too. Patriots 4, Bengals 5, Steelers 7.
They've got the Steelers at 250, plus 250 to go to the Super Bowl, win the AFC. Houston, 2250.
He has Houston ranked 11th, but ahead of Washington.
So they've got Houston as 2250 to even come out of the AFC, let alone put them in a Super Bowl matchup. So they're not even putting it on the board.
Speaking of the Patriots, did you see the Tom Brady high ankle sprain report?
I saw ankle sprain. I didn't see high ankle sprain.
Said high ankle. Now, I mean, Brady, like said, I guess in an interview, he'll be ready to go in a couple weeks. But that's usually a 4-week injury. So,
well, why is it a 4-week injury for Brady, but it's not for D'Angelo?
Well, no, his was a mild high ankle sprain.
Ah, mild high ankle sprain. Right. So, is this a mild high ankle sprain or a severe high ankle sprain for Brady?
Somewhat more severe, I think. I don't know. Who knows? All right, back to Ed. Tomlin shouldn't be on the hot seat, especially when you look at the field of potential replacements that's out there. I'm hearing a list of candidates for the Eagles coaching position, and I'm glad we're not there. The AFC, by the way, is completely up in the air, and I don't see a standout. The Steelers can eliminate turnovers and create one or two. They can beat anyone. Why are you upset at Ed? He's pointing out the correct.
Right, because when you heard the name assessment. Mike Tomlin back in 2006, you were doing backflips, right?
Well, you don't like Tomlin. You don't think he was any good, so maybe they didn't find a good guy.
No, I said, actually, that's completely counter to what I said.
No,
I said
he liked him better at the beginning.
I said Tomlin was a good hire, and he worked out great early, and the last few years have been mediocre.
Well, that doesn't sound like a great hire to me. A guy that flames out
after
a couple years.
No, I mean, if you win a couple Super Bowls, or you go to a couple Super Bowls,
you liked him when he
won.
Now you don't like him. He's gotten worse.
Well, that's some stunning analysis. Of course, yes.
You think Tomlin's gotten worse as the years have gone on?
I do. I do. I think, doesn't the record bear that out?
Okay, but you're saying that, like, is that a shining coach that they plucked out of the ranks?
I think there's a big difference between a good hire at the time and a guy who should still have the job. Was Tom Coughlin a good hire?
Okay, you tell me, Tim, of all these candidates, the Mike Smiths, the Matt Patricias, the Adam Gases, the Doug Marones, who's the next Tomlin here that's going to come in and win a Super Bowl in year one or two?
I don't see it. I don't know, and it's not my job to know. It's my job if I'm an owner to hire the right guy, okay? And they hired the right guy in Tomlin. Did anybody – when Tomlin's name was brought up, he was an outlier. It was – going to be either one of the two assistants in Russ and Wiz, or Cower on the way out suggested Chan. And who was the other one? Was Wonstadt? Did Wonstadt's name come up again? Or who was it? There's another candidate out there. There's the fourth guy. And Tomlin was their own Rooney Rule candidate. Remember, that was the talk. There was a guy from the Texans, too, who was also African-American. That was a defensive backs coach. Was it Gray? Was it Ron Gray?
Wasn't Ron Rivera in the mix, too?
Oh, Ron Rivera kind of came up. Maybe Ron Rivera was the other one. You're right about that. It was Ron Rivera. So those were the guys. So, like, if Mike Tomlin's name had been brought up for the Steeler job or any other job at that time, we would have gotten an email from Ed or somebody like Ed who said, Mike Tomlin, defensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings, weren't they 31st in the league against the pass this year?
Okay, maybe, but, these guys are all retreads. I guess Adam Gase is the Mike Tomlin candidate. I guess he's the
No. Adam Gase is much more high profile than Mike Tomlin ever was. Adam Gase was a high-profile guy last year. Let's not rewrite history here.
Okay, well, who's the Tomlin of this group then? Who's the diamond in the rough? Is it Matt Patricia?
Again, the point is, I don't know.
Well, that's such
a
cop-out. I don't know.
No, it's not a cop-out. The cop-out is
You're a smart guy, Tim. You can evaluate these coaches as good
as anybody. Then my guess is Matt Patricia's not the right guy, because when Belichick guys get hired, especially defensive coordinators, they don't go on to great things, like Romeo Crennel. It didn't work out. So, I mean, if you want some instinct, my instinct of that is no, it's not Matt Patricia.
Okay, I agree with you. You can say Tomlin was an outlier, but when I heard about Tomlin and read about him and we were hearing about the buzz and the quotes and his players loved him, and he seemed like a pretty interesting candidate
to me. Yeah, after the hire.
No. The weeks leading up to the hire. I distinctly remember talking Tomlin before he was hired.
Yeah, real late. You have to, because he was the only one of three guys to get a second interview. It was the two offensive, the two coordinators, coaches, and him.
He sounded intriguing. This field, I don't see a guy like that so far.
The cop-out is you can't fire somebody or you can't make a move because who else is out there? That's the cop-out.
I think you do need to have a replacement candidate in place. If they were going to make a trade for Sean Payton, I think we could talk. You want to trade a second-round pick for a coach that's been there and done that. That would be the way I would go if they were going to fire Tomlin. But again, we're past this. This was last week's discussion, right? Even you
were contingent
on
losing
to Cleveland. No. All right. We got Penn State coming up. Real quick, some interesting college action last night. Guy, did you watch any college basketball for number one v number two?
No.
It was unbelievable. That game was unbelievable. I mean, they got tired by the end. By the middle of the, not even the middle, the start of the second overtime, the quality of play degenerated. But the quality of play up until that was off the charts good. Bryce Johnson throws down 39 points and 21 rebounds for Florida State. It looks like it's going to be the performance of the, or against Florida State rather, for North Carolina. It looks like it's going to be the performance of the year. And then all of a sudden, he's erased within the span of 2 hours by Buddy Hield, who almost got to 50.
46. He had 22 in the first half. Dickie V on the call, 1v2. I guess they were both number one, right? One in each pole, and then
two in the other pole.
At Fog Allen Fieldhouse. So I haven't watched a ton of college hoops. Tim, I guess you were at the Syracuse Pitt game last Wednesday. That's going to, once we're in conference play, I start to watch a little more. The fact that Pitt is ranked all of a sudden, maybe that will get some college hoops buzz going in the town again.
I'm going tomorrow night. They ranked both, they were ranked in one last week, not this week, they're ranked in both polls.
And I mean,
they have one loss to a very good Purdue team. They should be.
Yeah. I mean, how impressive was the Pitt win over your boys, or did Syracuse just play poorly in that game?
Syracuse played pretty poorly, but Pitt made shots in the second half. And Jeter, again, against Syracuse, he's very good against his zone, says he always has been good against his zone, knows how to find the soft spots, just like Pitt always does against Syracuse. And, you know, their two guys, Young and Artist, were solid. So, if not very good, those are two well-rounded players. You know, they do a lot of things well, and they're doing a lot of things well right now. Will it be enough to maintain to get in the tournament? I don't know, but you know,
they're rebounding better than they were last year.
The ACC is going to get eight teams in. You know, there's no reason why they can't be the eighth best team in the ACC.
You know, it's kind of what else I kind of like. It seems more like back when I was a kid watching. I mean, you got Luther, you got Young, and you got 3WPL guys that are playing a role in it. Jeter, said Beaver Falls, Duquesne, and
Cameron Johnson's a Moon Hampton. Township guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And Mike Lisak, he's a walk-on. He doesn't play much, but, I mean, he's, I think, a Steel Valley guy. I mean, that team's got a lot of guys on it from this area, which to me makes it a little more interesting.
I think so, too. There was a guy who was hammering me on Twitter for saying something about that, you know, who cares about where they're from?
I do.
You know, I do, too. I'm like you. I mean, I think that adds a little bit of intrigue to me.
To some people, it doesn't matter. But, I mean, you know, some of these programs get one-and-done guys, and they have names that you can't pronounce. And, you know, that shakes a little of my interest in it.
And they get good bench scoring, right? They coming into the game, they were leading the ACC in bench scoring. They get Sheldon Jeter and Chris Jones mostly as their two bench guys.
Seems like they do that a lot. He's really, you know, he narrows the rotation in the in conference games. I don't know if that'll continue, but
if they go 10 deep, it could be to their edge. Anyway, there's a little buzz there that I didn't expect this year with all these grad transfers. Tim, I thought, this is gonna be a down year for Pitt, like a bridge year for them.
But the ACC is soft, even though they're going to get eight teams in. I think it's a little softer than what people anticipated, and I think we got reinforced last night by what we saw from the Big 12. That's the conference this year, the Big 12, and I think Pitt can maybe pull off a couple more regular season wins this year that it couldn't last year.
They get the Dukies in Pittsburgh coming up in a few weeks.
They're closer to Duke this year than they were last year. Not just by them, but by Duke. They're closer. I don't know if they're closer to North Carolina. That might be a good example based on what we saw last night. But I don't see the top of the ACC being as far away from the middle as the ACC as it was a season ago.
Coming up in the 11 a.m. hour, we'll keep the Steelers talk going. What are your thoughts on the house money nature of the Steelers' entrance into the playoffs and the rivalry, the state of the rivalry, Steelers-Bengals, also health versus momentum of this team? Coming up, though, a little Penguins fix in short order. Pens and the Blackhawks tonight, and tomorrow night for that matter. Also some rationale and some possibilities for tweaking the Winter Classic. And then Mark Cavalli will join us at 11:30 here on Trib Live Radio. We're brought to you by the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James, Pittsburgh Magazine's Face of Financial Guidance, Junker, Laird & Benz.
You don't need to face criminal charges alone. Call me, Frank Walker, 412-532-6805.
Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on Trib Live Radio, don't miss Wrestling Reality with Justin Labar. Justin talks to the biggest stars in the WWE and brings you the latest scoop in the world of wrestling. Plus, he takes your calls every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Wrestling Reality on Trib Live Radio.
$5 for breakfast, $10 for lunch, $15 for dinner. You're eating, but you're not eating gourmet food for those prices. If you work for 30 years and then are retired for 30 years, you're going to need $10,900 a year just to eat at those prices. That's not factoring in inflation or taxes. That would be $327,000 just to eat in your retirement years without inflation, and another $327,000 to feed your spouse or significant other. In other words, if you're now questioning if you've saved enough to eat in retirement, call the financial advisors of the Spanos Group of Raymond James, 866-916-RETIRE, to develop a written financial goal plan tailored to your resources and financial goals. Spanos Group, Pittsburgh Magazine's Face of Financial Guidance. That number again, 866-916-RETIRE. Raymond James & Associates, Inc., member New York Stock Exchange, SIPC.